Howdy-do, buckaroos. This is the Mac Observer Daily Observations Podcast. It is January 3rd, 2019, Thursday, to most of the rest of you. Today, I have two interesting guests with me. I have Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
Howdy.
And a howdy to you. I also have with me John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi, I am all sobered up.
All right, so.
Well, I'm back from Texas.
All right. Apparently, I apologize. I said I had Brian. What I really have is Roscoe Pico Train. The Mac Observer Daily Observations Podcast regrets the error. All right. So what I wanted to talk to you guys about today is the only thing that anybody seems able to talk about today. And that is Tim Cook wrote a letter yesterday about sales. So, Brian, I would like a little bit if you would please take us to stock market school about this. And I'm very interested in your take.
Would you like me to quote from the letter, the pertinent bits?
Yes, let's start there.
Let's see. Wall Street, blah, blah, blah. China, blah, blah, blah. We expected some of this, blah, blah, blah.
That sounds like the long and the short of it. Yeah.
There you have it. The pertinent bits.
Oh, man, this letter. I tell you,
The CYA letter.
I wouldn't call it a CYA. I would actually call it more of a RYA, which is reassure your butt.
Well, let's back up a little bit. So what they're saying is what this is supposed to do, the function of this letter is to adjust Apple's guidance for the upcoming quarter.
It's a very rare earnings miss from Apple. So every quarter, Apple offers guidance, and that guidance usually includes expected gross margins, revenues, like I don't know, tax rate or something. A couple of the things that are mostly pertinent to analysts, and it's the guidance that Apple lowered its own guidance for the December quarter the day after the December quarter ended. So really what Apple is saying ahead of time is that we missed. We missed our revenue.
Yes.
And that super rare. Apple nails its guidance on revenues. They give for the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years.
Something like that, yeah.
Maybe seven, even for a while now. Apple stopped sandbagging, where they would they know that they were going to do say $50 billion in sales, and so they would tell analysts, "Yeah, we expect to do 40 to 40." Would even give a range. We expect to do 45 in revenues, and then they, lo and behold, they turn in 50. They did that for years and years and years. So they stopped sandbagging because everyone knew that they were sandbagging and it was a pointless exercise. Mm-hmm. And they started offering a range. And that range was essentially right at about, I don't know, it was plus or minus $90 billion. Mm-hmm. And or maybe $90 billion was at the high end, but Wall Street was expecting Apple to turn in $91.3 billion in revenues, and
for this last quarter.
Okay. Instead, Apple did $84 billion, which is still an awful lot of money. And I know that Apple detractors or Apple fans want to really focus on the fact that that's a lot of money, but Apple missed its own guidance. That is a significant thing to happen.
Yes.
At this point in time. And the thing is, you've got the broader picture within which this is happening, because Apple just stopped reporting iPhone unit sales. And Wall Street is just, all clucking about this, worried that what that means is that
Apple, the end of time, from what I've been reading.
It means that Apple, that iPhone unit sales are not increasing anymore. That's what it means. Mm-hmm. And Apple wants to change the conversation and wants its revenues and profits to be judged on iPhone money's being brought in versus iPhone unit sales. Mm-hmm. And Wall Street is like, you know, worried about what that actually means. That's already happening. And then you had the usual, like, and I noted this in my piece, year round Apple is being besieged by, you know, various reports coming out of the supply chain, supposedly.
Right.
Indicating that this or that iPhone is a failure. That's mm-hmm. has been the case for the last several years. And it's while that has always turned out not to be the case until now. Mm-hmm. Apple is getting those same kinds of reports about the iPhone XR not selling well. And sure enough, the iPhone XR is being discounted or was being discounted heavily in the lead up to Christmas. Mm-hmm. So
my theory is that Apple bumped into an upgrade cycle favorably and thought it was going to continue forever. I think there are a lot of people with iPhone 6s that were ready for an iPhone 10. Successes when it came out, iPhone 10, and they go, okay, I can do this. But there's sort of a conservation of psyche going on here. Yeah, you can do a $1,000 phone once, and then you say to yourself, I'm going to make this thing last for 2 or 3 years.
Yeah,
I can't do this every year.
The 10 line is expensive, and the 10R line, a lot of people focus on the fact that the 10R brought sub-$1,000, you know, so brought most of that technology that was in the mm-hmm. 10 to below $1,000. But the reality is that it also increased the entry level new phone by $50 from $699 to $749, and that $699 price was also a bump. So, like, you know, Apple's been ratcheting up its prices, mm-hmm. and it seems like maybe we got to a point where that's an issue. Now, enter Tim Cook's letter, where he basically blames the revenue shortfall essentially entirely on economic headwinds in greater China. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's confirmation bias, but I look at the company's current results and I'm thinking to myself, dude, use that one weird trick that you learned a couple of years ago for boosting Mac sales, which is to release new models, release more new models. Like new iMacs, a new mm-hmm. iMac Pro. Get that Mac Pro out the door. Like, don't gouge us on Mac upgrade pricing. Stop ignoring the Mac, and maybe you can have some sales there. Now, okay, I've got to shove my own words back in my face, because if Apple had been doing that all along, they still would have had a revenue shortfall because of China.
Right.
Assuming that Tim Cook's letter is accurate, but mm-hmm. but
there's also a sort of an iPhone sickness there, Brian, where if you have so much money coming in, like 80 to 90 billion a quarter on the phone, you can afford to get a sneeze or two on your phone. And then people will argue in meetings that, you know, selling more Macs is not going to make up that shortfall, and selling more mesh routers is not going to make up the shortfall, so why bother? And you can address the iPhone issue because that's where the money is.
So there's one thing I want to do with this, and that's add a little bit of context. So because this is the thing I always do, if we were to find and replace Apple with another company, with say another another FANG company, right? Would this be the same situation? Because China's economic slowdown is not China quit buying Apple stuff. It's China quit buying stuff. Like, it's an overall economic slowdown, which is not the same as just everybody bought a $1,000 phone last year and this year decided not to.
Well, I would counter that with,
I'm asking if that's right. Like, I don't know, but it seems like
that's what Tim Cook said.
Yeah, economic slowdown in China would affect everybody. Now, maybe not the way it's affecting Apple. I'm happy to admit that, but I want to know if it's the possibility.
Affect Apple if Apple had a much less expensive entry level iPhone, new iPhone. I mean, China has demonstrated over and over again that the Chinese consumers want the latest, greatest.
Yes.
They don't want to buy last year's model of the year, 2 years ago model, et cetera. So would the $749 entry level iPhone XR did that contribute to the slowdown in China? I would argue I don't have this data. I don't know this data. This is mm-hmm. my own truthiness here.
We've heard stories that the Tenhar is not doing well, which means that even at that level, people are struggling.
Right? Yeah, but we hear they pick. It seems like a model gets chosen every year to be the failure, and that's the one that we hear all the stories about.
Yeah, and in heretofore, those stories have not been accurate, and now all of a sudden, apparently, they are.
Right.
That's the thing.
So there's a different conversation to be had, I think, in parallel with all of this, which is that we may have reached peak iPhone, and maybe Face ID wasn't a big enough deal, and maybe what's possible at the moment with your pocket computer is about, you know... It's the same sort of thing as like we got with processors. You know, there was a point where it was, you know, Moore's Law was every 6 months, and then it became 12, then it became 18, and that stuff sort of slowed down as it turned out that the faster processor wasn't necessarily the thing that was going to make things any better. And there hasn't overall been a lot of day-to-day functionality stuff that's been built into the new model this year and last, aside from Face ID, which is a different thing, but it's just another way to unlock your phone without having to enter a passcode. So it's not something that fundamentally changes what people are doing with their phones. Like, I can buy stuff, I can pay for stuff at the store by bonking my phone on the thing where I used to swipe my credit card. That's a new thing. Bonk. And, you know, bonk. Like, yes.
Bonk.
Oh no, John's caught in subroutine. So this is what I'm wondering about is, like, you know, there's that going on as well. Like, you know, peak iPhone, Apple, I always assumed Apple saw peak iPhone coming, which is why they said they were going to stop reporting units.
Well, yeah. And then again, the issue here is not Apple still ridiculously wonderful $84 billion in sales. The issue is that Apple missed its own guidance. Mm-hmm. This isn't like Apple missing Wall Street's guidance. Apple fans love to get cranky when Wall Street gives, you know, has a different consensus estimate than what Apple actually does. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But they shouldn't be upset about that because you know, that's
those
long conversation
are pulled
in itself.
Out of the air sometimes.
Yeah, they're not pulled out of the, but it they're not like pulled it. Out of the air. And when they are pulled out of the air, John, it's because Apple doesn't tell us anything.
Right.
So it is a bed of Apple's own making.
I'm always suspicious of the algorithms. It's not like some petaflop AI deduced.
Oh, no.
3 billion.
No, it's
going to be.
It's more art than it is pulling stuff out of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
But that's not the point, too. Let me tell you why I'm cranky about this. Let me give a better example, a better overview of why I'm cranky.
Yes.
If Apple had a revenue shortfall when it was releasing new products, I wouldn't be upset. As a Mac fan, as an Apple fan, I'm cranky because I'm looking at this thing that's been bothering me for years, which is Apple pulling back on features, pulling back on products that I loved and used. And no longer, in particular with Macs, no longer releasing new ones every year for all models, mm-hmm. right?
In some cases.
I look at that and I see this as the fulfillment of this thing that's been bothering me for years. It may not be. It may only be issues in China, and it may even be some Chinese nationalism situation heating up between Washington and Beijing. You know, maybe folks are less interested in buying American products. I don't know exactly what happened there, but it would be a lot easier for me to swallow Tim Cook's letter if Apple was firing on all cylinders and taking that enormous buttload of money that it makes all the time, including the December quarter, mm-hmm. right? They still made a ridiculous amount of money in the December quarter, and they were spending that releasing new products. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm pissy.
Well, Brian, I look forward to reading your longer form piece on this.
Seems to me, Brian, that typically with companies, the seeds of failure are built into success. You keep pushing success, and you assume that we've been successful, we'll always be successful. and you don't really plan for fleshing out your product portfolio as you suggested, because the iPhone was doing so well. And then when the iPhone sales start to taper off, you're under pressure from your investors to generate more revenue, so you raise the ASP. And so you get the seeds of failure kind of built into this process. And sooner or later, it has to break down. But while it's in the growth mode, everybody thinks the future will always be the way it always was. Right? And so you kind of get caught up, and that's what brought this situation on.
Well, I hear. And fair warning to everyone, John Keat and I are going to discuss this.
That was the other thing I was debating. Do I just say I look forward to hearing you and John Keat talk about it or not?
I can't wait.
I went ahead and invited him back earlier than I was planning to because of this particular development. But you know,
so what you're talking about there, though, Brian, is Apple Context Machine. So people can look forward to the next episode of Apple Context Machine, digging into this a little more deeply. Okay.
Yes, and I know that he's going to end up bringing up Scully, John Scully.
Okay.
And as Scully coasted on the intellectual
capital
that Steve Jobs had left behind, and Apple was doing fabulously well under John Scully, even while everything was falling apart. And I'm going to fight him tooth and nail on that. But anyway, I know that that's going to come up. Oh, he's also going to bring up the fact that every time Apple had any kind of big downturn under Steve Jobs, that Steve Jobs always said, we're going to innovate our way out of this. And that's not what Tim Cook said.
Now, as I recall, ACM is not G-rated, is it?
It is family friendly still, yes.
Oh, okay. ACM is.
Yeah, that's why he wanted to do Pop 0.0.
Yes.
Okay.
It's because he chafed at having to speak like an adult. Love you, John.
Hi, John. I think I'm going to set the timer on finding out when exactly in the day John listens to TDO. Okay. So with that, I do... So. What we heard, what we saw in the letter, my take on what you just said, Brian, is what we saw in the letter was Tim sort of saying what happened, and I haven't seen anything about what we're going to do about it. And so that's the part that I was sort of looking forward to was, okay, now what? And, you know, you said, Steve said, we always said, let's innovate a way out of this. And I'm interested to see if that piece of culture is still in place at Apple.
Well, he does have a paragraph talking about what he's going to deal with it. And I kind of cringe when I read it. So this is actual quoting. We can't change macroeconomic conditions, but we are undertaking and accelerating other initiatives to improve our results. One such initiative is making it simple to trade in a phone in our stores, finance the purchase over time, and get help transferring data from the current to the new phone. This is not only great for the environment, it's great for, come on, seriously?
Dude? The phone is not the problem.
Like, the ability to buy, that's just...
We're going to make it easier to get rid of your old phone because...
That is so not. We're going to innovate our way out of it.
No, it's not. It's not.
Anyway, so John and I were talking about that too. That was his point. Good. I got to give him credit for that. He's the one who was making this point.
I'm not convinced the phone is the issue either. So, yeah. Watch this space, as they say, because as this develops, I'm sure I'll have you guys back to talk about it. In the meantime, I'm going to go ahead and talk about our sponsors right now really quick.
Hold on.
Okay.
I own a tiny share, stake in Apple, just to get that.
Yes.
Full disclosure out there. I'm sorry. Please, sponsors, much more important.
And it's basically enough that you have to say it, but it's not enough for much else.
One share is enough to say it.
Right. Okay. So... All right, let's try again. So now I want to talk about our sponsors. Our first sponsor is Eve Home. With Eve Energy in particular, everything about Eve Energy says you're in control. You can turn your appliances on and off with a tap in the app, or you can use a voice command. You can automate things with timers so that you can have lights come on or other devices come on. Like the coffee maker can be ready and waiting for you when you come down in the morning. You can do loads of things with timers, turn things on, but also turn things off. You can also monitor how much power you're using while those devices are running. And you can take advantage of HomeKit, which makes sure that everything that you're using is easy to use and that it's super duper secure. Plus, you can boss everything around with the assistant in your phone. Eve Energy connects directly to your phone or iPad using Bluetooth low energy. So there's no bridge. You don't have to go find that little device and find a little Ethernet port and plug something else into your network and worry about Wi-Fi. So you don't have to worry about any of that. You can turn, like I said, you can turn on anything in your home with a tap in the app, or you can just ask the S lady to do it. And this works whether you are home or not. So that's also really important. And like I said, set a timer and have things turn on when you want them to, but also have them turn off when you want them to. You can even set things up to respond to occupancy. So whenever there's somebody that's home, everything's working for them just like it should. And if nobody's home, then none of that stuff is turning on for you. You can, like I said, you can monitor power consumption. And with that, you can also use cost. You can also monitor the cost of what things are. So if you want to find out more, you can go over to evehome.com, and that's EVEHOME.com. And you can learn more there and see how to get your hands on one of those devices. Our second sponsor today is Ops Genie by Atlassian. And when it comes to incidents, whether they are planned or unplanned, it all comes down to how your company responds. So prompt and precise alerting are the really important first step, because alerts are super important. And with applications being more complex than ever, incidents sometimes require coordination between lots of different people on lots of different teams. That's why there's Ops Genie by Atlassian. Ops Genie empowers dev teams and op teams to plan service disruptions and stay in control during unplanned incidents. They can respond quickly and efficiently. And across all those teams, the right people get notified thanks to integrations with tons of different services that make it possible for everybody to keep track of what's going on. You can visit opsgenie.com. That's OPSGENIE.com. And you can set up your free account today. And you can, with your company account, you can add up to 5 team members. Now, the other thing I want to talk about today is, John, you have a piece about upgrading to Mojave on your production machine. And I want to point out to people, Mojave came out last fall in the standard upgrade cycle. And John, you've been running it, just not on your production machine. And with a little downtime over the holidays, you took that opportunity to upgrade.
Yeah, when you're running it on a MacBook through the betas, and you know, you have a built-in trackpad and you're just looking at features, that's one thing. But putting it on a production machine is quite a bit different. The TLDR version is that I was thrilled with how easy it went and how great Mojave is and its features. But I'm a little bit concerned about all the bookkeeping one has to go through to authorize your apps. I went through a series of minor headaches with Spam Sieve and my mouse. And I can see how somebody who's opening up a new MacBook Pro out of the box with Mojave is having to go through this process of installing apps and setting up permissions and constant dialog boxes and setting up the privacy preferences and allowing accessibility. For somebody who's an experienced user, it's not a problem, although it's a little bit annoying. But for a fairly new user, I worry that it seems like almost Windows-like detail and minutia and downer activities that require you to kind of nurse your Mac into life and permissions. So that was my perspective on the upgrade.
Okay. So the actual upgrade process wasn't terrible.
No, it went like a dream. It was seamless, easy. It's been that way for years now. I mean, there were times in the past when there were reports of people, you know, having problems with the 0.0 release of a new version of Mac OS. Mm-hmm. And the word would get out and we'd say, okay, now let's wait for a few days until Apple, you know, fixes this. Or they come out with the 0.1 release. But for years now, you've been able to reliably jump to El Capitan and Sierra and High Sierra and Mojave with confidence that you're not going to bork your Mac into oblivion.
Right.
And it just works.
Which is great. Now, one thing I want to point out in your particular upgrade process is that you were coming from High Sierra, so you had already gone to APFS. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So for people who are coming from Sierra and higher, or Sierra and below, I mean, then they may have to wait for the drive portion of that to go from HFS or HFS Plus to APFS. Is that correct?
You know, I've forgotten whether Apple has allowed in subsequent releases whether you can put APFS on a hard disk. In the early release of High Sierra, you could not.
Right.
But as I recall, somewhere along the line last year in High Sierra, Apple fixed it so that when you upgraded to High Sierra, you had the option of putting APFS on a hard disk and a Fusion Drive. Is that right? Does that ring a bell, guys?
It was the Fusion Drive was the one I remember you couldn't do it on. I don't remember about the others.
Yeah, but that's fixed now. That's fixed now.
Okay. So you may have to wait a little while for that, but basically this all comes down to you kick off the installer and you go make a sandwich and you come back and you have to type your password a bunch of times, I'm guessing.
No, you don't.
Oh.
You just have to type it once.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, another thing that I know that, John, you want to point out is that it's good to be upgraded to a reasonably recent version of macOS for security reasons.
Always. Now, even though Apple issues security updates for two versions back, I haven't seen a lot of updates for Sierra. Maybe I just missed them, but I've seen security updates for High Sierra here through the fall. Mm-hmm. And so Apple at least issues updates for the version past. But there's always little wrinkles. And it's one thing to issue a security update within the framework of the operating system as it is. But Mojave takes another step in terms of authorization of apps to control your Mac and so on. And so if High Sierra doesn't have the guts to support the latest security technologies, then all you can do is issue security updates that work within the framework of High Sierra.
Yeah, you can only do the best you can do with what High Sierra has, and then sometimes those fundamental frameworks have changed between operating systems, so the next one is a little bit better being secure than the last.
Every once in a while, I hear somebody or a reader will tell me they're still running Snow Leopard, and I think, oh dear.
Now, sometimes people are running it for a reason, and one thing I want to point out about this one is that, because I don't know how much ink or podcast time has been spent on it, is that for people who don't know, the 32-bit apocalypse like we had on iOS with iOS 11, with the 32-bit apocalypse, the same thing is coming to Mac OS. So 32-bit apps, if a 32-bit app is still functional on Mojave and you launch the app, you will get a warning that it's gonna break if it's not already broken. Sometimes enough operating systems have passed that something is already broken no matter what. So the thing I want to put out is that Mojave is the last operating system where 32-bit apps will launch, and if you launch them, they will warn you about it occasionally. And when 10.15 comes out, whatever they call that, they're not going to work at all.
Not at all.
Yeah. So keep that in mind. So, and so you know, if you're not on High Sierra, at least you should get at least that far.
There's a nuance there, and it applies to me. I have a favorite little stupid graphic app that does one little job for me that I like, and it's 32-bit, and the company went out of business years ago, so it's never going to be upgraded. Fortunately, I have an alternative in Graphics Converter, which is a beloved app that I use.
Oh, Graphic Converter.
Graphic,
good stuff.
Graphic Converter. Right. And it'll do the job, but it won't do it as quickly and easily as my quick little graphics tool. So not only do you need to talk to your developer people about getting upgraded, but you also have to scout around and figure out whether there's an app that just isn't ever going to be upgraded, and figure out what substitute you're going to have to buy or lease.
Right. Because some apps aren't. Like, there are just going to be some 32-bit apps that don't work anymore, the end.
And now is the time to start planning for that.
Precisely.
Time will slip
and
away.
Maybe you just have to make a little adjustment to your workflow. Maybe you have to track down a whole new app. Maybe I know in some cases when somebody gives up development of an app, sometimes what happens is they will sort of team up with another developer who makes something that does something similar and go, yeah, if you have a license for this, you can get a discount on a new license of the other thing because that person is maintaining that software or something.
Yeah.
So you just have to go find those. Now, is it Roaring Apps, John, where you can go check compatibility of things?
Right.
Wasn't that what
Jeff
it was called?
Gamet, Jeff Gamet has become circumspect about Roaring Apps because it seems to him that the crowdsourcing wasn't as full-fledged, as energetic as it has been in the past.
Yeah, it used to be great.
It used to be great. But so Jeff doesn't recommend it anymore, but it's not a bad site to just check anyway to see if there's any useful information there.
It's a good place to start. And if we talk about it a little bit and more people go there and more people put mileage on it and more people use it, then it will get better again.
And there's lots of articles at Mac Observer that have been written in the past. I think Andrew Orr has written one. I may have written one about how to check, create a list of those apps that are 32-bit. So you can have a working list to start figuring out replacements.
Yeah. And if you have... if you have apps that you're not able to find something else for, maybe it's time to adjust your workflow, because if somebody's not going to develop that app, that's not going to change. So you may just have to find a better way to do that. So with that, I will go ahead and call it for today. So this has been the Daily Observations Podcast, January 3rd, 2019. Brian Chaffin, thank you so much for coming by and taking us to Stock Market School.
Indeed, thanks for having me.
And I'm really excited to hear what you and John have to say later today on Apple Context Machine. Also with me today, I have John Martellaro. Thanks so much, John.
It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I'm really glad both of you were here. I've been your host, Kelly Gamont. And as I said, Mac Observer Daily Observations for January 3rd. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.